The night before his world went up in flames, Stuart Price sat reading an article in National Geographic about Egypt's mummified animals, shrews to gazelles to longhorn cattle, with statuary built to encase them. Most of all, the Egyptians' mummified pet cats. Tensing imperceptibly in his easy chair, Stuart read how, in 1888, treasure hunters uncovered many thousands of mummified cats, layered 20 or 30 deep. Deemed worthless except as fertilizer, these dry husk cats were piled to the gunwales and shipped to England, where they were plowed into English farmland. The article had an odd effect on Stuart. What struck him more than its wild facts was the simpler fact that he had never heard of this. How was it possible? As he sat in his scavenged chair, reading from a borrowed magazine, he was most made to feel boring. Not bored, boring. An affront to life out there, a life from which sprang such colorful stories. He saw how his own life had narrowed, and in the past 5 years, ridiculously. It might look like asceticism, but it just wasn't. His simplicity had no purpose other than thrift. After 2 decades as shop teacher at Lambrick Park High, at age 51, a year behind schedule, he'd retired and, today, paid off his house. Since the divorce, he had dedicated his life to exactly those 2 things, pay off mortgage, retire. Going so far as to borrow magazines, drive a 33-year-old Datsun, and neither eat out nor order in. So what? Stuart considered with feet up on the coffee table he'd built himself. What did this sphincter-like frugality mean in a world where mummified 3,000-year-old cats were packed in schooners, shipped to England, dug in with the peas and carrots, and no one found it remarkable enough to talk about endlessly or put into history books? As colorful as all this was, Stuart Price wouldn't recall the article or these thoughts until weeks later, when he would wonder if he'd cursed himself by wishing for a less boring life. "The curse of the cat mummy's tomb," he'd say to Melody. Mel would want no part of curses or notions that we bring about our own misfortune, which was understandable given her health. After reading about the cats, what Stuart did was go and look in the bathroom mirror, which confirmed how boring he'd grown. He wasn't a drinker, yet his face had widened to blandness. His hair, once a rich chestnut, had fallen to gunmetal gray. No, make that the color of lead. What he did next was go out on the sun deck to conduct a corny little ceremony. It was nothing much. He thought he recalled his parents doing it in their barbecue. He found some matches in the junk drawer. Sitting on a deck chair in his white socks, he crumpled the document into a dirt-filled plastic planter. Touching match to paper, he felt hollow, realizing that this is something you did with a loved one, clinking champagne glasses and sitting back to watch the bank's paper shackles curl and blacken. He hurried into the kitchen and returned with a bottle of beer that he tapped against the wooden wall of his house, his clumsily square and rooted ship. He sipped and watched his mortgage papers burn, legalese only dimly understood and too boring to ever read. But it was fire, which is never boring, especially when it turns away from the feeding human hand to find its own fuel. Dawn, Stuart woke instantly. Something wrong, something yanking him headfirst from bed. He was up and walking fast. His head felt out of its socket, and his vision 3 feet in front of his eyes, and he understood the wrongness to be smoke. He sprinted to his kitchen, its white walls bright though the lights were off, and he saw through the double glass doors his sun deck and outer wall on fire. He grabbed the phone while yelling, "Jen, Jen," and jabbed 911, shouted his address twice, and then he was out on the deck with his garden hose, standing in full Halloween orange glare, half the time dousing the fire at his feet, and half the time spraying into the bigger brightness of the flaring wall. He was making a dent in it, too, was getting somewhere. The flames, as he extinguished them, making the roar of a pot of water poured on a campfire, but 10 times as loud, a true roar that blasted water back at him. His glasses. Getting out of bed, he'd somehow put his glasses on, catching the dirty spray full of ash. Again, he said, "Jen," but to himself. Odd to have shouted for a daughter who had never set foot in this house. Spraying, he saw where the fire obviously had begun, There, against the burning wall, was what used to be the plastic planter, reduced now to a melted blob of green, silent purple flames hovering over it.